Shalom from Machane Ramah in the Berkshires. This is Parsha Talk. I'm Rabbi Elliot Malamit. With me is Rabbi Jeremy Kamalowski and Rabbi Barry Chesler. Shalom.
Shalom.
One of the best Torah podcasts in Dutchess County.
On Kol Ramah 102.3. Now we are starting a new book. If you want to hear this online, which you are, kolramah.us. This is a new book, a new parsha in a new book, first parsha in the new book, Dvarim.
Every
Dvarim.
Chapter in campus. Well,
that's right. First Shabbat of the second second. Okay. We got to state the obvious. One of our listeners actually last week picked up on the fact that we said that Bamidbar is a book of politics and Dvarim is a book of theology. But the theology really doesn't start until we get into some other parshiot, like next week and the weeks after. But we need to sketch the setting of this, the temporal setting, the geographical setting. Where are we? When are we? What's going on? What's the program of this book? And who are the people that Moshe is speaking to? And who is Moses at this point?
So, well, the program is easy. It's 102.3 on your FM dial. So geographically, I think it's the simplest. We're east of the Jordan, and we're both almost there and there, because 2.5 tribes already have their land on the east side of the Jordan. Everyone is assembled. They're ready to go. And they're waiting for the words from Moshe before they undertake the entrance into the land to realize their destiny, our destiny, and put the Torah into action as the guidebook for daily life it was intended to be.
This is Moshe's last day of life. He is 120 years old. This book, if you read it from cover to cover out loud, is going to be about, what, 6 hours? 6 hours worth of...
There are
about 12 parshiot. 12 parshiot, about 20 minutes of parsha. But, you know, give him a couple of breaks, a cup of water. It's about 5 hours, 6 hours of oratory. He's going to talk to death. And I can imagine people in the congregation going, like, pointing to their watch and going, like, Moshe.
It's like that story we had on the Talmud today with David and Shlomo.
Oh, I think we can tell a different story about the time that the rabbi and the chazan and the president of the shul get taken captive by cannibals. That's a great joke.
How does it go?
It's the rabbi, the cantor, and the president of the shul get taken by cannibals, and the cannibals are going to execute them all, and the rabbi says, but I just want to preach one last sermon, and the chazan says, I have one last request. If I can just sing the Kiddusha one last time, and the president of the shul says, I have just one request. Kill me first.
All right.
We have Moshe. So what's important here, I think, is that there seems to be a dual focus. We have Moshe, as you mentioned, Elliot, at the end of his life, his last day. And we have B'nai Yisrael, but we have a new B'nai Yisrael. We have the B'nai Yisrael that has been born in the desert or left Egypt at a tender age, except for Caleb and Yehoshua, who will enter as older men. And Moshe is talking to them in a sense as if they were their parents, because he speaks to them as they were the generation who actually left Egypt and caused all the problems that we discussed so wonderfully when we discussed the books of Bamidbar. And it seems that Moshe has to get the new people to own their history, that they can't say we're the new generation, the past is behind us. They have to take the past with them into the land, and it's a past that they have to remember in order to make the future what it's supposed to be.
Look, it is a complicated past, and one of the themes that we need to think about is, how do you tell your story? How do you relate your history here? And here, Moshe's rendition of these events is somewhat different from the way these events are told when they happen. I mean, how would you categorize or characterize Moshe's retelling of the events?
Well, I think there are, again, two things. I'm a binary person, so everything with me is in twos. So on one hand, I think we could see how Moshe has learned something in the 40 years. So he is reviewing the events not as they transpired, which we had in the previous books, but as he reflects upon them. They're part of the past. They're not happening right now. And he's thinking about them. The classic case for me is the episode of the spies. It's very clear to most careful readers of the Torah and Parshat Shalach that God commands Moshe to take the spies and send them into the land. And here in our Parsha, Devarim, Moshe says to the Israelites, you were the ones who ordered the spies. But he's talking to people who were not the ones responsible.
Yeah.
He's talking to their children. And I think what happened is, you know, one of the things I like to emphasize in my teaching with high school kids and here at camp is that the Torah is in black and white, but the life behind it is not. It's never clear how God speaks to us. And what seems to be God's word in Shalach Lecha, 40 years later, Moshe recognizes this was not the voice of God telling us to scout out the land.
What about the moment where Moshe says, "Gam bi hitanaf," God is angry at me also. And he doesn't elaborate on the reason for that.
Well, this will be picked up again next week, I think. Look, Moses has been the faithful shepherd, but he's going to leave this world with a tinge of regret because his goal is he could see it, he could almost taste it, but he can't touch it. And it nags at him. And he's looking to understand, how is it that I have got to this pinnacle, which he will ascend when he gets to Har Nebo, and yet I cannot get to my goal.
Right.
And so here perhaps he says that, you know, you made this happen because of you. It's not just me.
Right. And I think one of the critical themes that is going to occupy the rest of the book of Dvarim is this sense of differentiation between Moshe and the people, that the people he is talking to are going to have an experience that is denied to him, that he is their leader, and can only go to a certain boundary. He is bound by the river. He is bound by the other river, let's say, and bound by the Sea of Reeds. This is a man that can't cross a boundary. And, you know, as we know, boundaries play a significant role in the entire Torah, in Bereshit as well, with the various patriarchs inside and outside of their boundaries. So Moshe is highly differentiated here, as I suppose all leaders need to be. Leaders need to be
successful
leaders. They need to be somewhat differentiated from the people. He is differentiated from them in age. He would be essentially 40 to 80 years older than them, 80 years older than them. And he's, by experience, by upbringing, by language, by temperament, in every which
and
way,
birth.
And by birth.
He was born in Egypt.
Right. Every which way you would describe his differentiation. How does that strike or resonate with...
Well, I think it's probably true in a lot of respects, although I would also add two things that I think he understands their experience, right? He understands what some of their problems are, and I want to refer to one aspect in which he's not speaking in the voice of the contemporary, quote, contemporary people who are standing with him now 40 years after, but when relating the story of the people's decision, which is, as Barry said, in Bamidbar, it's God says, send the spies. In Devarim, it's the people says, well, we need the spies. And Moshe says, Vaitav be'enai hadavar. And I thought that was a good idea, too. And Rashi notes, well, I thought it was a good idea, but God didn't agree. That's the plan. And Moshe doesn't say, you know, I and God thought this was a bad idea. He actually says to the people, you and I thought this was a good idea. It didn't work out well. He associates himself and his fate with the people. We have a wonderful midrash that after the golden calf, God says, that's it, I've had it with these knuckleheads, I'm going to get rid of them all, and I'm going to make a new people from you. And Moshe, according to that midrash, says, Moshe isn't worth one fingernail of these people. Moshe is What I have or what I do is because I'm a member of these people, and I cast my fate with them. And I want to refer to another, to me, just a fabulous comment of Rashi. As Moshe is telling the story of the people and their rebellion, their faithlessness with in the incident of the spies, he quotes them as saying, "Vatomru," and you guys said at that time, "Besinat Adonai otanu hotzi anu meretz Mitzrayim." God took us out of Egypt because God hated us, right? And so Rashi's comment is just, it's a masterful moment of why I love the sages, why I love reading rabbinic literature, because it's so psychologically deep. He says, you know, this is like the Mashal Hedyot, the sort of common sense little parable, that what you say about someone else is what you really feel about them. When you say, oh, you know, Reuven hates me, Reuven wants to kill me, it's an expression at a psychological level of the transference. Really, you want to kill Reuven. So Rashi understands Moses is saying, you said that God hated you in taking out of Egypt. You're really reflecting your hostility at God for being taken out of Egypt. You liked it back there. It was some better food, and you knew where you were going. And it's the people's psychological anger at God that is being expressed in that story.
It's interesting because in Egypt, they actually did not go anywhere, right? The mission that God sends them on, the Exodus and the wilderness, is all directional. It's going someplace. They're on the move. Right. And here, they're about to be on the move again. They've wandered, although as Rashi points out, the 40 years was not all wandering. There was a lot of stationary time. But there are people in transit. Because that's what life is. Life is about movement. I'm reminded there's this great image that Buber mentions about Egyptian art, where the pictures of the people are static, and you just have the idea that they'll never, ever move. Mm. You know, we would say it's a problem with the perspective of the painting, but there's something very deep about that image of Egypt as being as solid as a pyramid.
Interesting. Look, this book is also a very static book. This is a book of people listening to speeches. And Bamidbar was a book of movement. Vayikra is a book that is stationary as well. And Shemot is a book of movement.
It's stationary, but it's like... It's stationary, but the whole thing happens inside JFK Terminal, right? Because, yes, they haven't yet moved, but they're all about to go through the gate. So this is like an anticipation and an excitement that comes with that.
Well, I want to focus on that for a second because we start off Eilat Dvarim, and I want to ask the notion of rebuke, of tochacha, which Barry, you've quoted the Rashi. Can you just kind of recollect for us the way Rashi understands what this book is about? And the question I have is this, do we think that this is the best way to get the people motivated to go in?
Yeah. Well, I think it is actually a good way to get them motivated because this is a book about Jewish identity. Who are we and who are we supposed to be? And we're not just about ourselves. Our lives are obviously in the moment, bordered by our birth and death dates, but we're part of a people that has a past and that has a future as well. And we have to embrace all of it. We can't just say, this is us, that's someone else. So the people who are going into the land need to know who their parents are, because they are their parents in a certain sense. That story that brought them here is their story, and if they don't remember it, they will meet the same failure that their parents did in the wilderness, only in the land of promise.
But, okay, so does it serve B'nai Israel to get beaten up here by Moshe? I mean, this is not only the first time. They'll get beaten up at the end of the...
There's a nice touch here, because there are a lot of strange places that I mentioned in the first couple of verses. And the image that Rashi quotes, they think of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saying, well, we've been through the entire Bible and we don't know any of these places. And he connects them, Derech Agav, indirectly to places that we do know. So Dizahav is a reference to the golden calf. So it's not really rebuke, but it's reproving them, it's correcting them in order to make them better. It's not you screwed up, you need to know that you're a screw up, but... Look, we made a mistake here. We have to do better next time.
So there's an implicit sense of tshuva, would you say?
Or hope. That it's not the... Right, sometimes when we're mired in mistakes, we think that's the end. This is a book for people who fell down and picked themselves up.
Really? Okay, so
I was going to say about this. You know, I'm not sure that for our listeners, for our many fans, that that rebuke ever seems like a great idea. I do like what you said, that there's a hope in every tochacha, because when you know, the very idea of tshuva is we're now in Av already, which means we are less than 2 months away from
the big days, the
horrible days, and you know, the very concept of tshuva is not you stink, but you can be great, right? So. But I do think that I love what you said about, first of all, you have to own your history. I think that in American life, whether it's, you know, the great stories of American life, which are all about lighting out for the territories like Huck Finn and creating your own identity and leaving Europe behind and leaving your own, you know, ancestral path behind, so you can forge an individual identity. I think that many of our chanichim in camp, as befits their status as millennials and near millennials, you know, have a tendency to think that their experience is sui generis and unique, that they are creations of themselves. And I think that owning your history and saying that where I come from is not an incidental fact, but very core to who I am, I think is super important. That's true at every level in Judaism.
It is a theme that will get driven home at the end of the book, too. Zechor Yomot Olam, Binu Shnot Dor V'Dor, in Azinu. Right? Remember the days of old. It's the idea to be aware of your history is something very powerful running through this book. Let's just talk briefly about the different kinds of relationships that need to be resolved here. We have Moshe and God, we have God and the people, and we have Moshe and the people. And they are all on track to some kind of resolution by the end of the book, would you say?
I like to remember how Moshe is described at the very end, that he's 120, we should all live to be that old, but his eyes and strength are undimmed. And we're well past the point where that's true. And Moshe has really been through it all. He took their parents out of Egypt, and now he has a new generation, and he's led them as faithfully as he did their parents. And I think there's something powerful about this image of Moshe as the faithful shepherd. The shepherd needs the sheep. Mm-hmm. The sheep often lead us astray. Sometimes when you go astray, you meet the burning bush.
Right.
Other times, perhaps you're less fortunate. But Moshe, I think, is faithful at the end.
Do we get the sense that God and Moshe have gotten there, whatever reconciliation there is, there seems to be a lot of tension between the two of them. Certainly, God, Moshe, in light of what we said of not being able to get into land, he's very, very resentful about that. Do they get reconciled by that?
I think so. I think that it's important here then to recall the manner of Moshe's death.
Yes.
It's in the Shikata Mavet.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
That's what you want.
So these are things that we need to look at as we go through this book. Let's pause here for a second and talk about where we are in the calendar, and that this is Shabbat Chazon. Mm. This is the Shabbat prior to...
Israel, yes.
The Shabbat prior to Tisha B'Av, Tisha B'Av Monday evening, Tuesday. This Shabbat is named Chazon because of the first word of the Haftarah, the Haftarah Hashlishit de Puranuta, Chazon Yishayahu ben Amoz, the vision of Isaiah. This is, you know, you don't sit with a cup of tea on this one. You don't.
Well, you know, in the Bible as we have it, the order of the books is, you know, Joshua and Judges and Samuel and Kings, and then come the literary prophets, those who are named, and it goes Yishayahu, Yirmiyahu, and Ezekiel, and then the smaller prophets, And that's basically a chronological order. In the Gemara in Bava Batra, however, it lists the books in a different order, and it lists them as Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Isaiah. And it says that Jeremiah is, and this is actually, I think, literarily sharp. Jeremiah belongs right after the book of Malachim, because first of all, he lived in that time. And second of all, Malachim basically ends with the destruction of the temple, which is what Jeremiah foresees. And the Gemara there says, Jeremiah is all rebuke, it's all negative. Ezekiel is half rebuke and half positive, because it has the, also the God on the Merkava and the rebuilding of the temple. And it says, Isaiah is all nechama, it's all comfort. And well, it's not exactly true, because Isaiah here in the beginning does say, you know, I raised you children and you rebelled against me and you've done all kinds of bad stuff. But Isaiah, he can't resist... the promises of comfort and the promises of rebuilding, and the whole thing ends with a line that should be familiar to all of our chanichim and all of our participants here, because it's in the Amidah. V'ashiva shoftayich kevarishona v'yoatzayich kevatchila, and I will restore your judges as old and your counselors as aforetime. V'acharkein yikarelach ir hatzedek kiryah ne'mana. You had been. The earlier in the Haftarah it says, Echa hita lezona kirya ne'mana, how the faithful city has become like a harlot. Mileti mishpat tzedek yalin ba v'ata meratzchem, it had been filled with justice, now it's full of murderers, but it's coming back, and I will make the judges restored as of old, and you will once again be called ir hatzedek kirya ne'mana, you will once again be called the city of justice, the faithful city. Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, Zion will be redeemed in justice. And by the way, Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, if any of the chevre are members of ZBT, the frat ZBT is an acronym for Tzion b'mishpat tipadeh, and he promises that for all of your waywardness and all of your mistakes and all of your wickedness and all of your murder and all of your injustice, there is a chance to restore.
It's a striking image as we get ready for Tisha B'Av, when we mourn the calamities that have befallen our people, that we conclude this HaTorah as we look into the abyss with this beautiful message of hope and redemption, that the city of peace and the city of shalom is only shalem, complete, with tzedek, tzedakah, and emunah. And that's our task this day and every day, to realize the tzedakah and the emunah in our lives and in the lives of our people.
In other words, it makes this Haftorah an important prelude to Tisha B'Av, because in fact on Tisha B'Av we are concerned with those themes. We spend basically half the day in mourning, half the day in the sense of remembrance and understanding of these kinds of calamities, and the second half is really a look towards the future. It's trying to understand our present reality in light of a perfect reality that Isaiah seems to be articulating here.
Right, and though we have to mourn and mourn deeply on Tisha B'Av, I think the HaTorah teaches us that we have to, even before, reach beyond as well. That we cannot allow ourselves to be consumed by the mourning on the day of Tisha B'Av, that we never get up from Shiva, as it were.
A real profound Jewish spirituality has to not ignore. I mean, it would be like utterly superficial to not engage in Judaism and recognize that our people has had a difficult route through history, that it's had a lot of failures that because of what other people have done to us, and failures in which we have failed to rise to the occasion. If you don't wrestle with that, you're I think really being superficial. And at the same time, there is a kind of self-indulgent fetishism of woe is me and it's all suffering, and that's not a way to live. You know, the way to live is to, you know, you can't not face up to the destruction of the temples, you can't not face up to the Shoah, but if you just live in misery all the time, you're not meeting the challenges of life. So there's so much to rejoice in as well.
Well, woe is us that our time has now reached its conclusion.
This is, right now, basically, we're at noon on Tisha B'Av. This moment, right?
we have to leave it here. Our conversation. There's so much to think about, both in terms of our first part, Dvarim, the introduction into these speeches, this place of Bnei Yisrael, ready to receive these words and anxious to enter the land. And our place in the calendar, which is both, you know, anticipating a beautiful Shabbat, but also aware that a couple of days later we experience this day of Tisha B'Av. It's complicated day. But then after Tisha B'Av, we look forward to a whole week that will be a wonderful, beautiful week. So with that, we want to say our blessing to our listeners and to the entire Machaneh. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom.